Just a quick warning that we will be talking about existentialism again, yay.
About suicide.
Death, headless cabooses, breakups, meaninglessness, etc. So if that's not for you, then just skip these next couple episodes.
Mercy me, the night is long. Mercy me, the night is long.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of A Hopeless Endeavor. Today, we're talking about Occident. My name is Sam.
My name is Nikki. Hello, Occident. Thank you guys for joining us. Sam, how do you feel about Occident?
I really love it. It is, I think, a really nice closure to this second vinyl. Yeah, I think it's sick. How do you feel?
I too think it is sick. I can't believe also we're at the last song on the second vinyl already. That's crazy. But yeah, I love it. I think it's great. I'm scared to talk about it, as I feel like I've been saying, but you know, it's true. There's like lots of big themes, but also things that I have trouble putting my finger on. But it's so nice. And there are such pretty lines in this song and such nice metaphors that make me want to sob.
Yeah.
And there's something about the whole just like by the water theme that I really enjoy. But I'm nervous to have this conversation.
Yeah, I'm also nervous. I think we say this every episode now, but there's very little on the internet already about this song. There's not, am I wrong? Is there a single thing on Genius about this?
No.
Not a single thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so hope you guys are okay with just us. Oh, actually, we got a really lovely email from Nyla, and the email was about Esme. But there was this snippet from an interview that they shared from a VPRO broadcast in the Netherlands from 2005. It was an interview. And Joanna just said some things that I thought were really lovely and we can think about as we go through the song. So the quote is, I've recoiled from associations with childhood that a lot of reviewers have made and interviewers have made, but one reason is that they tend towards this version of childhood that is innocent and naive. I do feel a connection with childhood in a deeper sense. I feel a deep connection with that way of thinking and also the capacity to look things straight on without any taboo or without any fear. The capacity to look at death like that. And I would even take it further to say that a connection to the part of childhood that makes us morbidly curious, you know, the way that children want to see dead things, the way that children sometimes sit up in the middle of the night and allow themselves to think about frightening things, even if they know it will frighten them. It is this boundless receptiveness to every aspect of the world, the ability to feel sadness without being blunted, without developing a callousness that makes us not able to feel the full weight of sadness anymore. I feel a connection to those things.
Holy shit.
Yeah. First of all, holy shit. Second of all, this is the last song on the second vinyl of three for this album. And I think it's just a really lovely way to, like, I think Occident very much is the end of this breakup. A decision has been made. This is what's happening. And I don't think there's a better example of boundless receptiveness than Have One On Me, like being open to love, being open to all of the wild things that come along with that. And yeah, I just thought that was a really nice way to start off this episode.
Super beautiful. I am really appreciative of that quote. And thank you for sending that to us. What was the person's name?
Nyla.
Nyla, thank you so much. She's so eloquent, I guess, in what she says. And I feel like a lot of her music is like that. Like this, like looking at shit head on that is super like rare within my own perspective and within other art that I consume. I think it's that's a cool way of describing her shit.
It is. And I think there's no one who does it better than her, who expresses the like unique shape that all of these feelings, all of these life experiences could take in the most beautiful way.
Okay. Want to start by defining Occident?
Yeah. So the definition that I really like for Occident is, this is just from like some random songmeanings.com comment. Occident is defined as the part of the horizon where the sun last appears in the evening. So if we're considering have one on me to be this like general lifespan of a relationship, the conclusion of disc two as being the end of this relationship is just like perfect. Chef's kiss on that.
Chef's kiss. Yes. I think that, so that's the definition I found too, was just like going down / setting. Also like that it means the West, which is like, you know, sunrises in the East and sets in the West. And then also all those themes that we've talked about already in Go Long. But I love the idea of this song just being the sun setting on the second vinyl, on the relationship, maybe on life itself. So I love that that's the title of the song. And that like that, I can't think offhand, but it seems to me that maybe this is the first title, at least on Have One On Me, where the word in the title doesn't actually itself appear in the song.
That's a good
I'm not sure if that's right, but I think it might be.
That's a good point. No Providence, Baby Birch on a Good Day, You and Me, Bass in California, Jackrabbits. Easy. Have One On Me, 81. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
You are right. Interesting.
Yay. Yeah, I thought that was interesting too. She doesn't do that frequently. I think a lot of her titles are based on shit she sings in the song.
And that's really interesting because our first, without getting into the lines yet, the first line, Mercy Me the Night is Long, Take My Pen to Write You This Song, is also very literal.
Yeah.
Like we're very in the moment with her, which is also something that doesn't happen very often at all.
No, it doesn't. I noticed that too. Like she's like acknowledging that this is a song I am writing.
Mm-hmm.
As we say that, I feel like I've said something like that before on this podcast, but I have no idea in what context.
I think we probably mentioned it in Baby Birch.
Yeah, that must be it. Right. Yeah, this is a song for Baby Birch. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
What else? Okay. So this was from Thought Catalog, the website, an article by Lee Alexander titled An Overly Intense Track-by-Track Analysis of Have One On Me, which I think we've referenced a few times. And this person's quote was, the relationship seems over again. Occident refers to the Western world. It was to the West she fled in California too. But according to the dictionary, its root construction means to fall. The third time an ejection from Eden has been referenced on this record. I know we talked about that a lot in 81. And also the song's slow, powerless tone reveals the narrator's helpless, confronted with a long life. All the years ahead, she wonders if she'll ever have the chance to resolve with her Bluebeard, to whom she's waving farewell on a shore, romantic imagery of waving a handkerchief in farewell or plea. It's kind of a nice place to start off too.
That is a cool place. I had no idea that the root construction of the word also meant to fall. I think that's super interesting. I feel like the whole second, I mean, this is too simplistic, but a lot of the second vinyl has been like that sort of like fall from paradise. Like it's been super, I mean, actually the whole album, I don't want to limit it to the second vinyl, but this is sort of like the crash landing of it that we've been getting and like skidding.
I know we said in California we were driving towards the cliff and it's like, okay, we're there. Like we're in midair. Here we come. No
fallen,
stopping us now.
Fallen, yeah. Still fallen.
Okay. There's one really great Blessing All the Birds post called Occident and Divers, which I'm not going to go into too much because I'm sure that'll be some lovely things to talk about when we eventually make it to Divers. And the quote I had here was, do we stay put or do we move? Do we take risks or do we refuse to ever change? Do we fear the future or do we embrace it? Do we stay in the Occident? And Melissa defines it as the past, its immutability, the death it represents. Or do we move forward to the Orient, the future, its mutability, and the birth it represents? And I just really liked the idea of Occident as representing this moving away from death, especially because we just left the most brutal go long and all of the death that hung out there.
Yeah, I thought that was a fantastic article too. I was really happy to have found it because I've thought for a while actually just that the song Occident and the song Divers off Divers, that they have this very similar vibe with the death imagery. And then also, to me specifically, the part that stuck out was like the baiting my kin like a matador and like the, bull tearing down the coast in Divers. Those things just seemed so linked in my head, like these two shore water imagery stuff happening and then the death stuff. And existential stuff too. Oh, my dog is here.
Hi, Ozzy.
Hi, Ozzy. Hi, baby.
Oh, there he goes.
Did you see him?
Yeah, I just saw him like a flash.
I think he heard the door open, so he needs to
investigate.
Okay,
the last thing I think I'll mention from emails, and this was one of the very first emails we ever received a year ago. Is it a year now? And this one's from Corey. So Corey had said, I know you mentioned this already, but like the relationship between water and land pops up again as a main theme on Divers and is even present in Have One on Me to a lesser extent. The beach coast imagery in You and Me Best, Occident and Kingfisher specifically come to mind. So Corey's on the same wavelength as you are.
Cool, Corey. I love her obsession with, I mean, she said this in some interview before. I know it from having like looked at her, I think interviews when Divers came out, I want to say, but where she said before that she's obsessed with the line that separates the land and the sea, or maybe the land and the sky, water and the sky. I forget now exactly, but we'll get there with Divers stuff.
Yes.
Okay, should we get right into the lyrics?
I think we better.
Let's do it.
You want to start us off today?
Sure. It's hard to know when to stop in this because the lines, at least on the joannanewsomlyrics.com, are like two lines long. The paragraphs are two
they
lines
are,
long.
They are, in the official lyrics they are as well, too. I'm just holding it up to my camera here.
Okay, how about I go up until down low?
Sure.
Okay. So she sings, mercy me, the night is long. Take my pen to write you this song. Lord, colon, is it harder to carry on or to know when you are done? All my life I've felt as though I'm inside a beautiful memory replaying with the sound turned down low.
Okay, so we start immediately with mercy me, which I think is something to take note of. Mercy me meaning like God have mercy on me or God help me or oh my. So there's some kind of feeling of alarm or agitation or feeling afraid or even just like the night is long, like this shit keeps going.
Yeah.
Like time is not moving forward.
Yes.
How is this still happening?
Like Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe like a very more polite, a much more polite version of Jesus fucking Christ. How are we still doing this? How are we still in this breakup? How has this not happened yet?
Jesus Christ, the night is long.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I love the idea both that he, like, because I feel like she references insomnia at various points throughout her corpus. And I think that here might be an allusion to insomnia, but then also obviously like the dark night of the soul kind of night, or the dark night of our souls in this never-ending breakup that we've been going through. Yeah, and she's just like, this is a lot. It's a lot. She's expressing alarm at the fact that this is a lot.
And it is a lot.
It is a lot.
Life is a lot. Being a person who is alive is a lot.
Yeah.
And I like the idea, like, I like that you bring up insomnia, because it's like, this night is never ending. I might as well take up my pen and write you this song. Like, what the fuck else am I doing?
Right. Not sleeping. Having a restful time.
No, for sure not having a restful time. Right. And we've just left Go Long. Like, yeah. I don't think there's like a further comparison to not a restful time than Go Long on the spectrum of like restful and fucking ridiculousness, violent ridiculousness. We're on that side.
We are firmly positioned in the ridiculousness. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's like, I just found a whole bunch of dead women in your fucking basement. I'm not restful.
Yeah. And Mercy Me makes sense in that too. Yeah. Like,
I need some light, goddammit.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I also really like here. So this is obviously, as with every fucking thing I ever say on this thing of ours, this is just my opinion, but I get this like pretty strong existential vibe throughout this song, and this reckoning with, as I said before, like not only death, but like just like meaninglessness, or like trying to figure out how to be alive and like where to go from here now that you're like sort of, is disanchored a word? Like unanchored.
Unanchored, yeah.
Yeah. And so I like here that she is sort of bringing God back into the picture, only because for me it sort of calls to mind, like, you know, when she says like, blink once if God, twice if no God. It just mm-hmm. like gives me this feeling as though she's like, oh, like I need something. Like maybe it's God that I need, because like I need help.
Yeah, we're grasping at straws here. Yeah. Time is not passing. The light is not coming. We need to do something. So I guess what we do is write you this song.
Yeah.
And I think it's very apt, because I know we talked a lot in Go Long about the habits of these mighty men, one of which is guitars and another is pens.
Interesting.
And I just like the idea that this role has flipped a little bit. Now here we are brooding with our pens in the middle of the night. I'm imagining overlooking the ocean, like just having a time.
That's super interesting. I hadn't thought of that, but totally. She's like assuming this thing that she had in the previous song attributed to men. Yeah, really interesting. Also, do you assume that the you in Take My Pen to Write You This Song is her partner?
I want to, but I also feel like it could be a note to herself.
Yeah.
Even though the night is very long, this is like a moment of clarity, and like mm-hmm. this is something that I want to remember the next time like I get tossed by the waves in this relationship.
Right.
Like, let's note these things down while I have my head on straight.
Yeah. Let's stare at this shit head on, as she said in the quote that you had brought up at the beginning. So,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Oh, and I love that quote so much, because it is so much about letting yourself feel things. Like when she's talking about children sitting up in the middle of the night, allowing themselves to be frightened. Like, I feel that's kind of where we are right now too. We're sitting up in the middle of the night and we're feeling it.
Yeah.
And
we're not running away from it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And we're, if it is a note to ourselves, to the narrator's self, then it's something that we want to remember and bring with us if time ever decides to move.
Right. Which feels like it's like up for debate right now. It may or may not. Right. And then I love just like this lyric, but also I'm curious what you think about the phrasing of it. So is it harder to carry on or to know when you are done? So obviously there's like this like heartbreaking dynamic here of like, what am I supposed to do, right? Am I supposed to persist in this relationship that keeps failing? But like, maybe you should like just keep working on it and not give up when things are tough. Like, is that the thing I'm supposed to do? Or is knowing when to give up the thing that I should be doing? So I think that's really interesting. But also the framing of the question of being like, not what should I do, carry on or know that I am done, but rather, is it harder to do this or to do this? And she sort of leaves it open. Like, are we supposed to think that the thing that's hardest to do is the thing that she should do? Like, should she do the hard thing? Or is she looking for an answer as to like, how am I going to have an easier time with this? Like, what am I? It's interesting.
I have almost that exact note. What's the better choice? Is it right. The easier choice? Is it the harder choice? Is it carrying on altogether? Is it like a greater existential question of like carrying on with life or just knowing that that's enough, that you are done? Is it in reference to the relationship? Like, what does done mean in this context?
Oh, that's interesting. I was just thinking of it as done as the, like being referencing the relationship, but oh my God, that it could refer to life is such a good point that totally could be happening here.
And interesting that we're asking the Lord to. Yeah. I think it is very much what you said earlier, that we need something to grasp onto in this moment. And that thing just happens to be God at this juncture. I feel very, like, listening to this, looking at these lyrics, I feel very much stuck between a rock and a hard place. Like, the answer is none of them are easy. Yeah. Both of them are hard. If we're just talking about the relationship, choosing to stay with a person who doesn't make you happy, Bluebeard, no, you don't stay with Bluebeard, obviously. But the other choice, like, foraging out on your own. What word am I thinking of?
Forging ahead. Yeah.
There we go. That's the context. Forging ahead on your own is also not an easy choice, especially because I'm still so stuck in the narrative of Bluebeard and like our bride didn't know what to do in the bloody chamber. Like, she has no life skills with which to carry her easily forward from that castle, and neither does Sally in Bluebeard's egg. Like, right. None of them are easy choices. Choosing to keep yourself alive is also not an easy choice.
No, it's not an easy choice, especially when the night is so long.
Yeah.
I just thought of maybe another interpretation. I don't know how much value to put in this, but the idea that, like, so I was just picturing how I would be feeling if I was, you know, in the wife's position in Bluebeard. Mm-hmm. And, like, obviously this is too literal, but, like, you know, I was thinking, like, the husband just died. Bluebeard just got killed. And, like, I could picture myself thinking, like, should I just be done with, like, men or, like, with dating in general? Like, is it harder to keep looking or to just give up more generally on like having someone there for you? And the only reason I bring up this interpretation is because at the very end when she says slow heart congregate, mm-hmm. that like there's some sort of answer, if that is the question, there might be some sort of answer to this question, which is like, no, like congregate with people, like keep trying to make it work with somebody even though it's so hard.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great point. Just saw Aussie run by.
That's so cute.
And just see his little butt in the tail.
What a goof.
You have fun. You're such a good boy. I love you so much.
Okay. Sorry for the interruption.
So we don't know what done really means in this context. And I think that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know it hasn't been an easy road for our narrator. And these are all valid questions.
Yeah, the narrator is meaning here, it does give the impression of, like, no matter what, just being on some sort of precipice. Like,
yes,
being on some sort of weird in-between ground where you're like, well, what do I do now? I'm, like, in between two phases of my life and, like, I'm not sure which way to go.
Yeah. What do you think of A Beautiful Memory?
Yeah, I feel like it's so fucking gorgeous and beautiful. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah. It's like a really nice disassociation from what's actually happening. A nice idea, anyway. I don't think actually being stuck inside A Beautiful Memory with the sound turned down low would be a nice experience. It's kind of like being, the note I have is like a fly on the wall to your own experience. Like, the memory is beautiful, but it's also replaying. So you're not getting anything new out of that. It's very muted. You have like a muted perception of your own experience and of other people. It's like so much of the things that she writes, which on the surface are like pretty and beautiful and incredible, but you dig a little deeper and it's like, I don't actually think that would be a nice, like a nice groundhoggy place to be.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And like, really, really love that about this verse or this line or whatever. Because you're right, like the word beautiful is like right in there. So it's like already this nice thing that in principle, but then it's replaying. The sound is turned down low too. So you can't really figure out quite the details of what are going on. You sort of just get the vibe of the situation more than like the content. And she's saying too, all my life I've felt this way.
Yes.
Which is like a heavy statement. Like to me, it also really, I'm such a broken record, but to me, it also really conveys the idea of not having agency, of like things being determined. And like, it's not like you're actively making these choices that determine what's going to happen in your life. You're sort of watching it already like play out the way that it was going to play out. And I think that to live that experience, like to experience not having agency, is like a really terrifying sort of thing. It's a scary picture, I think, that she's painting here.
I think so too. And it's like wrapped up in a really lovely package on top.
But yeah,
when you open it, it's actually, and I wonder if that just speaks to like, and I know we've talked about this so much too, just like the greater roles that in traditional society women play and that men play. And it's like, I've been playing this role for so long. This is what it felt like and this is what it sounded like.
Yeah.
And again, not having that agency to kind of shake yourself out of that. Yeah, my only other note is for that, like, all my life is a long time.
It's a real long time.
And again, you know, the night is long. This is like a continuation of that too, right?
Yeah. I get this weird duality in this song between the vibe that like life is fucking long. There's so much time. And also like, no, shit is like rushing towards an end. We're like, you know, thundering blissful towards death.
Yes.
And sometimes we're not all that blissful. Like, I get this, this being pulled in two directions here with it's both really long and really short.
And I think that speaks to their relationship at this point too, right? Like, it is thundering towards an ending, most certainly.
Yeah.
But you know, when you're inside of that relationship, I'm sure it didn't feel blissful. And I'm sure it, you know, it could sometimes feel like, when is this shit going to end? Like,
Yeah. Yeah. And like,
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say like that, the when is this shit going to end? feeling sort of paired with
when is this shit gonna end ness.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. It's a lot of hyphens, but yeah. It's that ness paired with the replaying, just like this memory replaying over and over again, makes me feel stuck in this
yes.
dynamic that's like inescapable and suffocating.
And panicky. Yeah, yeah. As you say that, it's like, oh no. Like, yeah. Nope, nope, nope. None of that. No, thank you.
Right.
It made me think of Sleeping Beauty too. I know we talked about Xia Perot in the, I think in the Go Long episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think they wrote, he wrote Beauty and the Beast.
Yes.
And what did I want to say about that? You know, the image that I got was one of Sleeping Beauty because she's in that the specific scene where she's in the glass, like, dome asleep.
Yeah.
And how, okay, bear with me for a second.
Yeah.
This is where my train of thought went. If you were inside glass in that sense, you would still be visible to everyone else. You would still be able to see everyone, but it would be in a very passive sense. Like, you're not necessarily conscious, but maybe you're still hearing in a very muted way everything that's going on. I read a little bit about Sleeping Beauty, how she was described as kind of naive and malleable, and felt like that was very much kind of reflected in what our narrator was like, at least at the beginning of the relationship. Mm-hmm. One thing in reading about Sleeping Beauty that I didn't realize was that in like so many of the versions of this, I don't know if it's a fairy tale, but I'll say it is, in this fairy tale, she's impregnated while she's asleep. That's like something that happens.
I did not know that.
No. Real gross.
Real gross. And
what else did I want to say? I don't know.
No, but I really, I like the imagery of being separated like that with like the sound being muted. Because it really does, the scene that you described really echoes like the... like sort of being there, like half being there in the scenes of your life, but then also being detached and disassociated enough. Like you, it feels like she's different from the other people in this memory that's replaying, right? Like
yes.
she is, yes. she has this like inability, or maybe inability is the wrong word, but like she's not currently present in the scenes in the same way as everybody else is. She's more removed because she feels like she's in a memory, like it's already happened, and she's sort of different from the person who's experiencing those things for the first time.
Yeah. And it's that lack of agency again, like yeah. you don't have the option to remove that glass and you can't wake up. There's some kind of spell set on you. Yeah, I also have a theory that Cassiopeia is somehow tied to Sleeping Beauty. In one of the narratives of Sleeping Beauty, she gives birth to twins, and the twins are born sucking their fingers. And in giving birth to these twins that are sucking their fingers while they're in her womb, they suck out like the piece of flax that caused Sleeping Beauty to be put to sleep.
Oh, yeah.
And that's for another episode. But
interesting.
Quiet hum is amplified by your thumb. Ooh. That you suck dry.
Real oh, yeah, that's fun right. One. I forgot about the thumb that you suck dry part. Interesting. I am really interested to hear your expanded thoughts about that when we get to Cassiopeia.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that's all I have for it this part. I think. Do you have more?
I really love this verse. It's one of those very visual, very like palpable verses that she writes. But it's also just like epically awful. She also
awful.
Does, at least on the vinyl, she almost hits like a whistle note when she sings all, and the way that she rounds the full sound in Beautiful kills me. Like, I probably listened to it 16 times today and was like, how does she hit these notes? Like,
I don't understand. That is a question for the ages. I don't know how anybody does and how she does specifically. And I just love her singing style. I know.
The song's also only her and the piano too, which happens a few times on this album, but I think is always worth noting.
At the end, don't more instruments come in? When she starts getting worked up?
Like drums or something? There's no one credited on in the notes here, but I think there's some drum that comes in at the end. I think you're right, yeah.
Because I can hear I wait while I decry the wait. I feel like there's like a temper tantrum happening in the background a little bit.
it only says her on the liner notes here. But
interesting. Yeah, you know what I would love to see? Joanna drumming for herself. Mm-hmm. I know that wouldn't work because she has other shit to do with her hands that are probably more important. But I want to see Joanna just like drumming along.
Yeah. I mean, if she wants to put out an album where it's just her and a drum, I will buy it. I will listen. We will talk about it. So just putting that out there. Okay. Before I read this, I think it's worth noting that at least in the lyric book, the official lyric book, slow heart and long life are both capitalized. And in my mind, that personifies both of them a little bit. So let's just keep that in mind. And she sings.
Sorry, personified and hyphenated, right? For both of them?
Yes.
Long life hyphen, slow heart hyphen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, exactly. In every instance. Oh, except for the last one, except for slow heart congregate, there's no hyphen.
Interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah. The grammar.
Ooh, some fuckery here.
Yeah. But I love details like that.
Me too.
So she sings. Long life, show your face. Slow heart, curb your taste. Smoke me out of my hiding place. Long life, state your case.
Interesting. So given the potential suicide-y framing of our question from the previous stuff we read, so the is it harder to carry on or to know when you are done, maybe referring to life, I find that interpretation sort of colors what I think of this verse in a way that I didn't think about before we started recording. Mm. Like, especially the last line, long life, state your case. Like, do I want you or am I done?
Yeah. And also, convince me that this is worth living. Convince me that life is worth living. Make me like the pros and cons list of hanging around for a long, long life. Yeah. Convince me that it's worth it. I'll consider it.
Right.
But if you can't convince me, like,
there's no telling what's going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Or even in terms of the relationship, like, convince me that it's worth taking this risk again. Because, like, so far, ending up with Bluebeard hasn't been great.
No.
Like, that's not a case for doing this all over again.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, the idea that she wants long life to show its face is interesting to me because, okay, this is just one theory, but it's like the way that I'm sort of making sense of it for myself right now, which is just that, like, in order to get through this gigantic life that she potentially has lying ahead of her, like, I think she wants to do it with somebody or maybe even not, but like, assuming that just for a second, like, and she's saying like, okay, like, if I'm going to get through this, it's going to need to have a face. And like, is the face of the partner that I have just been with? Like, should I carry on with them or is it somebody else? And if it's somebody else, fucking show me, because I'm done with the guessing game, right? Like, I want to know the details and the specifics of who I'm supposed to be with, who is the person that I get to be with. And, you know, even as I say that, I'm like, you know, it doesn't have to be a person. It could just be like the long life that she's going to live. If it's going to be by herself, she needs to see that face too, the face of whatever. Like, how am I going to get through? Show me the way.
Yeah. show your face can mean like to emerge, to come out, to arise. And I think it's all of those things, like you said, like also for some reason, I feel like it's show me the truth, like show me what's good, like show me what's worthy of carrying on here. Show me the good. Yeah, like that pros and cons. Show me the good. Show me the bad. But like, really, I need to see the good at this point. Give me a little bit of hope.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah. Definitely some hope seeking here, I think.
Slow heart, curb your taste. Like, curb your taste to me is like, chill out a little bit. Like, it's like the heart is longing for something immediately.
Yeah.
And our narrator saying, maybe to herself, like, shh, 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 like just hold on. We need to figure things out a little bit. Like the heart is hungry immediately for, like you said, for someone else, for probably some kinder love, some gentler love. But like we need to figure a few things out first. Like first, let's decide if we're going to keep ourselves alive and then slow heart. Like we'll get there.
It for some reason brings to mind for me the Sawdust and Diamonds, you would have seen me through, but I could not undo that desire. Like it feels like she needs to undo this desire right now. Like she wants to say to her heart, like, whatever, like, I know you love this one person or whatever it is, but you need to settle down. You need to take a breath.
And the reference to taste, too, just makes me like a very silly way think of like, I need to spoil the food I'm about to eat because like the hunger that I have is too great. Like I'm going to be sick if I eat this right now. So I'm going to put so much salt on it that like it's not possible to eat. Otherwise, I'll go overboard with this. Overindulge.
Right.
I will overindulge.
Yeah, like because like to curb something is just to like put it to the side. Is that right? Or like to taper it or something? To curb your enthusiasm.
Yeah, curb. Like to curb your extravagant taste.
Interesting.
To like bring it down a little bit, chill it out a little bit.
Take it down a notch.
You keep it under control.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
Something that restrains or holds back.
Right. Also, what do you take it to mean? Like, why is slow heart here?
I wish I knew. I love it. Like, the idea of a slow heart is a really, really beautiful thing, especially it's just really beautiful imagery.
Yeah.
What song did we talk about hearts in so much? In California?
In California.
And I love all of those references. But what does it mean? I don't know. I like the idea that it's maybe like a personification of our narrator. And that long life. I think I read this somewhere too. Someone had said again on songmeanings.com that they believed that there was like a dichotomy between long life and slow heart.
Mm.
And that I'm assuming the partner is long life and she, our narrator, is slow heart in some sense, but then I think there's also that greater existential application of it, which is like maybe like what you need and what you want, or what you need and what you want, I think is a nice way to put it.
Interesting. I'm trying to make sense of the idea that it's a dichotomy. So like, because I don't know. I really don't know how to take... I love it too, as you said, but I'm not... My brain isn't like... I love it with my heart and not my head.
Yeah. I think the dichotomy... And again, this is just a random Google I did. I think the dichotomy comes from at least in my mind, that idea that like life is both very fast and very slow. Mm-hmm. So we're looking down this long road, but also moving through it very slowly.
Interesting.
And that doesn't even really make sense.
But maybe it doesn't have to. Like, maybe it doesn't have to. Other things I was thinking or other possibilities, I guess. I was like, I don't know, if you're feeling like panicky, you'd want your heart to slow down. Like,
yeah,
like calmer heart. I don't know, though. And then like, I was also just thinking maybe like slow heart in the sense that like her heart is slow to adjust, sort of.
Oh. And you know what we talked about slow heart in Colleen at the end of the song when she dives into the water.
Oh, yeah, that's and right.
The deeper you get, the colder the water gets, your heart has to slow to keep yourself alive. And so, oh, maybe it's like this really nice idea of like stealing yourself to be able to do shit, to be able to move from point A to point B.
Interesting.
Like in order to get to that long life, I need to just like freeze myself for a little bit. Yeah. And just kind of like melt my way through before I can fully be myself again.
Like calm myself down or something, or like, yeah. Interesting. Slow heart. It like also maybe if we're just thinking about the line that comes after this particular instance of slow heart, the curb your taste, mm-hmm. sort of maybe relating to like curb your desires, like curb what mm-hmm. you want. Maybe it could be like my heart is like slow to let go of things, you know, yeah. It's like slow to accept that like this relationship is over. And so I'm still having these desires that linger on beyond what my head tells me is an active possibility. Yeah. So like still having feelings for someone, even though you know you can't, you're done with them, but your heart's like, no.
Yeah. I don't think that's wrong at all.
Interesting. Anyways, we'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on this too. So send us, if you have theories, let us know.
Have we talked about smoke me out? Smoke me out, like, just makes me think of, like, a fox hunt. And you're smoking the fox out of their little hole to be able to do bad things to them. But also, it's, like, a way of forcing someone out of their comfort zone.
Right.
Or... is it like, oh, this song's so hard.
It's super hard. Yeah.
Is it like, because we've been inside this beautiful memory replaying with the sound turned down low for so long, is smoking ourselves out of it, like in a really jarring, violent way, the only way to change things? Like, is it a way to just like shake shit up a little bit?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it back to the quote, the interview quote that you cited at the beginning, like, it could just be like, I mean, by the way, I also don't know who it, like, smoke me out sounds like an imperative to me, like a command.
Mm.
But I'm not sure who she's giving the command to. Is she?
No, me neither.
Yeah. But I was going to say, like, maybe she's saying, like, smoke me out of my hiding place in the sense that, like, as you said, like, get me out of my comfort zone so I can face this shit head on now. Like, I can't, there's no more dancing around being like, oh, Bluebeard, there's all this other stuff to pay attention to, or like, you know, California or jackrabbits and I'm clawing at your chest. Like, none of that. Like, let me face this head on and actually see, like, do I continue with this or don't I? Probably the answer is that I don't. Do I continue with life or don't I? Like, deal with this shit directly.
And in a very literal way, like, if we're just thinking about the narratives of Go Long, like, we've seen some shit. I don't blame the narrator at all for hiding.
Yeah.
After all of this, because what an intense fucking traumatic song. Like, what a horrible narrative. Like, it's incredible. I will say again, if you haven't read Angela Carter's The Bloody Chamber, do it. Mm-hmm. Because it blew my mind. But wouldn't anyone want to, like, bury themselves after that?
Not only just after Golong, which, like, of course after Golong, but, like, also, like, we had Baby Birch. We have this narrator, like, dealing with all sorts of with jackrabbits and You and Me Best. There's been hangings. Yeah. There's been so much death. Like, holy God. Yes, I'd be hiding, too. I'd be cowering away, like, just deep. Deeply hidden as I could be. But it's, I don't know, it's like brave of her, of the narrator, to be wanting to be done with that, wanting to be done with hiding, even though that might have been like a necessary thing that she had to do for self-preservation. She's saying like, "Hey, I'm done. I need to deal with things."
I just Googled define slow heart. And it's just giving me medical stuff. Like, if you have bradycardia, it literally prevents your brain and other organs from getting enough oxygen.
Right.
So you have chest pain. You're going to be confused. You're going to have memory problems. You're going to be tired. I don't think that's super applicable.
Man, I would love it if the definition was like, you'd have memory problems. Lots of people will report it being like they're in a memory replaying with the sound turned low.
Like, I wish that that's how Google worked. Like, you type in anything and it just gives you the most applicable Joanna Newsom lyric. Would be ideal.
It sure would. Okay. Are we done with this lovely verse?
Yeah, state your case. We did state your case, right? Mm-hmm. Convince me it's worth carrying on. Yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
Oh, one thing I'd wanted to comment on that you had said at the very beginning of our recording, Sam, was just, I think you were quoting someone, the woman maybe, or the person who did the, like, an overly intense track-by-track analysis or whatever.
Yes, from Thought Catalog.
Yeah, from, exactly. I think that that person had said something about like the melody of this, which is, I think that they had described it as powerless, and I had just wanted to like thumbs up that adjective to describe what this sounds like. I think that at the end it becomes a bit more powerful. Like I said, I get like some like temper tantrum isn't the right word, but some like rebelling against this powerlessness. I get some like rebellious vibes at the end of this song, but I think that until that sort of like picking up of the way she sings it, it does very much just feel like tired and disenchanted, maybe. I don't know.
I think disenchanted is a really good word. Maybe this like being fed up with life in general, but also like with the powerlessness that you've had up until this point. And hopefully the next step would be to reclaim a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Do you want to read the next verse here?
Yeah, sure. So I'm going to let you all know when a dash makes an appearance. But Sam, correct me if I'm wrong, because I only have the website up. So, all right. So she sings, "What in the world are we waiting for? Dash. Building glowing cities along the shore, where the wind batters in, baiting my kin like a matador? ?
It's a long question.
It is a long question with like a little aside. Because I think, right, unless I'm just misreading this, I think the question is, what in the world are we waiting for? ? But the aside is that, like, we've been building glowing cities along the shore where the wind batters in, baiting, and the wind is baiting my kin like a matador. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have a hard time understanding this verse.
Yeah.
Because on first read, I want to say something like, the we is the relationship. Like, why haven't we broken up yet? Yeah. Why do we keep going on with this? Like, it is obviously bad. No one's having a good time anymore. Shit's been soured forever.
Yeah.
And the things that we've built are things we've built together are these glowing cities along the shore. But having built these things, my kin is still being battered by the wind. Like, things are still bad. And it makes me think of Baby Birch in a weird way, too. And I don't really know who kin is referring to. Right. I think the Matador comparison here is, like, awful, but also really incredible. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you insofar as this is a hard verse, I think, to understand. I agree that I think that we is like the partner and the narrator. So for the rest of it, like, I mean, one thing that I get from this, and this is just my interpretation, but is that I'm picturing like the wind sort of being like the winds of like fate or of like something beyond their little home, like their safe place on the shore. And I'm picturing like the wind being like tempting to her kin. So it's baiting her kin to like to go away, I guess, right? Because like when you bait, when a matador like waves his like flag or whatever, and a bull comes charging at the matador, like it's charging towards a real bad fate. And so I'm picturing this like wind of change, maybe, or like wind of fate, or of just other, not otherworldliness, but like this wind coming in from some other place, this like foreign threat coming in and tempting her family to like leave her or to for change to happen. And I think that there is a certain aspect of being afraid of change happening in this song.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I don't really know.
I don't really know either. the idea of baiting is really interesting because I really liked what you said about them being safe inside their nice little bubble, and maybe they're inside that beautiful muted memory together. And they're replaying the times that were good instead of facing what's going on the outside. And I feel like this is something we talked about maybe in Only Skin. When they're in bed together and like leaving the bed is to kind of sacrifice the good for reality. Mm. I like the idea of the wind kind of blowing in the truth that like shit isn't good. And like you can hide as long as you want. You could hide for this entire long life. But, you know, the second you step outside that door, the truth hits you. I really like the matador idea here. So I think what I wanted to reference here was this. Maybe it was in the next verse, but this idea of the ship from the Blessing All the Birds article, which we'll get to, but the wind makes me think of it too.
Yeah, because of like the mast and stuff, like the
right. And this,
and like the wind is what propels the ship, right? Like it's bringing death towards us.
Exactly. So this is an article by Melissa, but I think she says here, this is Rachel's theory that the towards the end of the song, the narrator stands at the border of the land. Blah, 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 I want to move. Arrival of a single mast ship who she fears will take away someone she loves. And Rachel acutely suggested signifies is death. A literal bearer of absence and symbolically the absence of immortality. An absence that can also come suddenly like the sting of a bee. The narrator is contemplating if love will be enough to save her, her family, and her partner from death, although she knows that their demise is inevitable. And that makes so much sense with what we've just said here. Like, it is inevitable that you will have to leave this house you've built eventually. Right. For food or for, I don't know, like you're out of money or you're out of space or you're out of time, really, like whatever it is, you can't hide away forever. I think we could tie that back to smoking yourself out of the hiding place too. Something is forcing you to move out of there. Mm-hmm. And whatever it is a risky thing. It's not good.
It's not good. Yeah. I really, really love the linking of the wind line with the mast stuff that comes after and just the threat therein of that ship. Also, like, do you think that in waiting... Okay, so I don't even know how to, like, frame this thought, but in waiting, is it that they're building the glowing cities? And she's like, what are we doing? Like, what? Why are we building these cities? Or is it...
Who's going to live in these cities?
Yeah, right.
Who are we building this for?
Right.
Like...
Right. And, like, it's so impermanent, right? Like, it's so... The wind's coming in. Like, there's, like, this imminent threat of death. It's baiting all my family towards it. And presumably me too, right? But, like, we're building these, like, elaborate cities. Like, all for what? It gives me this, again, like, kind of existentially vibe of just, like, what are we doing? What are we all doing?
Yeah.
Like, it's not that this isn't going according to plan. It's, like, why this plan? Like, what are we supposed to be doing with our lives?
Yeah. Who's going to live here?
Yeah.
Like, who's going to live in these... this abundance of house, like, and these like eccentric projects that have no real purpose because we've already decided that this shit isn't happening.
Right.
Like we're not moving forward with this.
Right.
Yeah.
It brings to mind the image of someone like working like meticulously on like some project or something and like someone else being like, like, you're just distracting yourself. Like, look, like, death is imminent. The world is going to end. But you're, like, busying yourself by building these cities along the shore.
Yeah. I think that's a beautiful imagery. It makes me think of Sisyphus at the same time, too. Like, you're just rolling the boulder up the hill for what?
Yes. And actually, that, I think, drawing a comparison to Sisyphus that you just did, I feel like is bolstered too by the fact that it's like a town along the shore. And I don't know if I'm just like primed with like global warming considerations, but I'm like, that's not gonna last very long. Like, you know, it is this sort of like, you know, like the, like, I think, like, I don't really know anything about this, so I'm speaking at a turn, but the like drawing a mandala in the sand and then just having it be brushed away and then just it like almost feels like that. Like you're just occupying your time, but maybe not in a very like healthy zen way. You're just busying yourself.
I mean, exactly. Yeah. I agree with all of that. Like, if you... And it really just speaks to that bigger question, right? Like, what is the point of doing any of this when we should be focusing on just surviving?
Yeah.
Like, you building these beautiful cities along the shore has absolutely no purpose except to distract from what's actually going on. But it's hard to pay attention to what is going on when shit is so bad.
Yeah. And when, like, so actually, like, the myth of Sisyphus, the book by Camus, starts out with the question, like, there's only one important philosophical question. It's like, do we kill ourselves or not? And I can also picture someone who's sort of in that mindset being like, what are you doing? Like, why are we building cities along the shore? Shouldn't we decide whether this is all worth it first?
Before we like, and is that not, Lord, is it harder to carry on or to know when you are done?
Right.
Just worded differently.
Cool. I love when we talk about something and I like have a totally different understanding of it walking away from it than I did before we got to it. So that feels nice.
This is an especially difficult verse, like it, just like the rest of the song. The idea of a matador baiting your kin, like with the wind. What?
Yeah. And the wind is battering too. Like it's like such a violent thing.
And there's some like the building batters baiting here. Who writes this stuff?
Who the fuck writes this shit?
It's very good. It's super good.
Very, very good. Soup. Good. Well done. Good soup. I like the way that it personifies almost the threat of death. Like it's active. It's not just like a thing that's going to come to pass. It's like this thing that's actively like, come.
Yes. Like, yes. Exactly. I see the matador waving their flag like, oh, what's behind here? You don't know what it is. It could be really cool, but it's not. It's like fucking death.
Death. Exactly. This is like such a stretch, but it brings to mind to me the videotape lyric by Radiohead where Tom York sings, Mephistopheles is just beneath and is reaching up to grab me. It's like this like active thing that's like, come to me. I will corrupt you with the death.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I'm pleased with that.
I mean, we did what we could. Okay, our next verse. We're not re-recording this one. We're keeping We're not. All of this.
I agree.
Sorry, guys.
I'm not sorry.
Our next verse, she sings. Our next verse. I wish. I wish we were just reviewing stuff that we wrote. Man. Joanna Newsom writes and sings, so much value placed upon what lies just beyond our plans, colon, waving my handkerchief, running along till the end of the sand. This one made me think in the most heartbreaking way about Monkey and Bear.
Oh, God.
Right? And how, like, the land of milk and honey was always just one step beyond what they could reach and never did reach.
But, like, that's what, like, that is where the value was placed. Like, that's what their whole life was directed towards, this thing that wasn't ever going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's sad.
Yeah, and Monkey knew was never going to happen.
Yeah.
But we can still, like, it's a very beautifully naive idea that, and also just like that's what you do. You build the beautiful cities and you trudge towards death because that's what you gotta do. That's all we can do.
You like trudge towards death while make believing that you're trudging towards some other plan, even though like we all know death is like the thing that we're all marching towards. We're like, no, I'm marching towards a promotion, or like I'm marching towards this next life event.
It's these lies we tell ourselves.
Right.
Too. But you have to.
Yeah.
How do you do anything else?
No, you don't. I think that's a bit of what the narrator is struggling with, is like, I am in this position where I can't just fully immerse myself in these experiences because I have this like lingering question of death bothering me all the time. And so it's taking me out of these moments. It's preventing my ability to just immerse myself fully in these projects. Which, like, takes away your coping mechanism.
This is why small talk is so hard for me too, because how is this not like what you talk about with people on a day-to-day basis? Like, doesn't everyone have to like talk themselves into going to work every day? Like, I have to do a mantra to get through. Like, I have to tell myself, like, time will pass.
Yeah.
The end of the day will this come. And then, you'll be able to build your stupid little city, but, you know, for the next 7.5 hours, this is what you got to do.
Totally. I feel like a quote unquote small talk would be so much more bearable if we were all like, yeah, like, hi, how are you? I'm good. How are you? Good, good. Isn't it crazy that death is like around the corner?
Yep.
Isn't it crazy that we have one life and this is what we have to do with it?
And this is what we're doing with it. Exactly. We're just little stupid ants marching towards the anthill. Fucking matador is hiding death from. Like, what?
Oh, God. All right.
I like the idea that there's like a dual meaning to lies here too. Like we've just said that, you know, we have to tell ourselves these lies to be able to get, you know, hopscotch from one thing to another. What lies just beyond our plans? More lies.
Like, yes. Yeah, I love that's a cool duality too. A cool like, but like, I struggle a little bit with this part because I'm like, wait, what is the thing that lies just beyond our plans that we're putting value upon? So, like, in a very literal way, I think I don't understand. So, like let's say my plan is to get a job at a law firm or something, or like whatever, like move to New York with my partner or like whatever it is. What's beyond that? Is it supposed to be like the happiness that is promised? Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's that you yeah, I think it's happiness. I think it's the land of milk and honey. It's that, like, right. I can stop putting on my little ant suit and going to work at the anthill every day because I'll have done it. Like, right, that's the last step. The plan is the plan.
Right. That makes sense. The plan is, like, we're going to move to New York or whatever. But, like, the thing that is supposed to bring us happiness is, like, then the life there, right?
Yes.
So just beyond our plans is, like, this, like, like you said, land of milk and honey.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Which doesn't actually exist for anyone.
It's a lie.
You never stop putting on your ant suit. There's ant suits in New York. New York is full of ants. Like, there's none. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, right.
But such is life.
Such is life.
Time is a symptom.
Yeah.
What can we do?
Man.
Waving my handkerchief, running along till the end of the sand. Are we waving goodbye to the ship? Are we, like, saying, I want to compare it to when Bluebeard left the bride in the castle. She would have enthusiastically waved goodbye and followed the ship as far as she could till the end of the sand. But I don't know what to say beyond that.
So I have like 5 different like theories about this, none of which I think are great.
Awesome. But great.
So like you said, like, so I saw somewhere that women waving their handkerchiefs, is a way of saying goodbye. And so going back to the Blessing All the Birds article that Melissa wrote, there's this, and like you'd said at the beginning of this, Sam, like, we're going to get into this so much more when we talk about divers, but there's this theme with the two songs, at least, where men are allowed to go travel in the water, either by diving or maybe by having, like, taking a ship somewhere. And we got that actually in the Angela Carter story too, right? Like the man, Bluebeard getting on his ship to go to, I think, New York, and the woman being stuck in the castle. And we get that here. Well, we don't have clearly a dude going out to sea, but we have this woman firmly stuck on shore. And whether she wants to leave or not, I think is an open question in this. I don't think she does. But it just brought to mind that imagery of this woman being like, this is where I'm staying. So maybe it's like that the man is like moving towards something or away from her or like doing his man business or something, right? And she's waving her handkerchief goodbye at him because she is, it's not her role to, or it's not what she will do. She's not going to go out venturing on the open water.
Or she's not able to.
Right.
Like, that's just not a role that she's allowed to have.
Right.
Yeah, the waving goodbye makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, so I was like, maybe she's waving goodbye to, like, a dude going away. Like, maybe she's also waving goodbye to, like, life. She might be waving goodbye to, like, the relationship. So those were my theories under the subheading of waving goodbye. I also found that, sorry, were you going to say something?
Nope. Okay. Go for it.
I also found that in the late 18th century, that a woman in particular waving her handkerchief would symbolize approval. So like at public events, women would go and like wave their handkerchief like at a politician that they really like speaking or whatever, or like like snapping at like a slam poetry slam.
Yeah.
But I couldn't really make that. I couldn't understand what that might mean in the context of this song, I don't think.
I like the idea of it like, I approve that you're leaving. Right. Like, yes, this is what we've agreed to. We're not good for each other in like the most sensible way, which I don't think is probably happening. This isn't like a sensible time. But yeah, I like it as in like, see ya. Good. This is good.
Right.
I don't know.
So the other thing, I guess it's still related to like my handkerchief questions, but I also like, towards the end of the sand, I think that there are different ways to think of like how the sand ends. So one is like you're running along the shore on like a beach or something, and then like the sand slowly turns into like grass or like concrete or something. You just like get to the end of the beach, right? And like to me, that in this song is symbolic of the end of life, right? Like this is all you get.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was thinking, like, another way that the sand might end is like running towards the water.
That's the way I envisioned it.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So, on that interpretation, a lot paired with like the handkerchief waving in approval interpretation, like, I can picture her running along being like, I approve. Like, this is all great. Life is happy here in our glowing cities. And then she gets to the water and she's like, oh,
I can't go there.
I can't go in there. And I'm not waving my handkerchief in approval at this anymore. This is not cool, actually. Let's not do this.
Yeah, but it's too late.
But it's too late. And then the other thing I had was like in surrender, waving like a white flag of surrender.
Sure.
And I mean, obviously that can relate to the existentialist themes here. Just being like, I'm done. I can't.
Yeah. Someone else make this decision for me because like I've done it. I've thought about it for way too long. This night is so long.
Yeah, right.
Like every scenario has crossed my mind on this pros and cons list for living.
Right.
That we're writing, and like someone just take control of this because it's enough.
Or I've decided in the bad direction, you know, I've decided against it. I surrender.
Yeah. And fair.
Yeah.
Like it's not easy.
No, it's not easy.
Conclusion.
Conclusion.
I don't know.
We don't understand. It's not easy. This song is not easy either.
No.
Okay, so that does it for part one of Occident. We will be back next week with part two.
So if you've been here with us on this hopeless endeavor the whole time, thank you so much. You know where to find us. We have an Instagram that is a Hopeless Endeavor podcast. We have an email address that is ahopelessendeavor@gmail.com. Nikki runs our Facebook group and our Patreon.
So Facebook is just a Hopeless Endeavor. Join us in podcasts. The Patreon I will link to in the show notes. Pretty sure it's just patreon.com/hopelessendeavor. There you can find bonus episodes and early episode releases. So yeah, go check out our Patreon. Both parts of Occident are currently up on the Patreon if you're interested. Please check that out. I think that is everything. As Sam said, thank you guys so much. We will see you next week.
Bye.